pressure. How do you calculate it?
I ask my niece.
Of course you do. I've only seen it given once, actually. I think he comes up with some kind of explanation that's outside of his field, and the surgeon says, is the orange sheet thing in the tube? And just be mindful of not pushing things in the exam too far. There are two ways they work. One is...
Hello, another episode of Scrubbing In.
Back in with another critical care one.
Another critical care.
Topic we all love.
Took us a month to go through critical care when we were revising.
Yeah, and then we go to chapter two.
And then by the end, it's like, oh, wow, I have to go through the whole of upper GI in like 3 days.
But critical care, there's some areas that are going to be quite important, isn't it? Everything we're saying, of course, this is never about making you a critical care specialist, which is just as well. It's just about having a
firm approach.
Yeah, it was what we all, in the context of a surgical patient. So today we're going to talk about what, Mo?
We're going to talk about local anaesthetic.
Okay, let's do it. Again, very common, comes up, and it's something that you don't need to know a huge amount about, you'd be pleased to know. But what are local anaesthetics?
So local anaesthetics are an irreversible.
Yeah, good start. They should be reversible.
Should be reversible.
I don't know what dentist you go to, but get another one.
So they're a reversible blockage of neurotransmission of pain signals. And they work in two ways, either blockage of the sodium channels intracellularly. So the local anesthetic molecule penetrates the cell wall of the neuron and blocks the sodium channel on the inside of the cell. And that stops the pain transmission alongside the root of the nerve.
Yeah.
The other way is the local anesthetic penetrates the cell wall and causes swelling and expansion of the cell wall, which further disrupts the sodium channel along the length of the cell wall.
Very nicely done. And that's how basic you want to keep it, because the examiner themselves is not entirely going to know how it works. What you want to do, what you want to say is something that's very clear, just like that, very simply. There are two ways they work. One is they... Go across the phospholipid membrane. That's the kind of key thing. Phospholipid membrane into the neuron, and then they cause.
And they block. They disrupt the activity of the sodium channel.
Yeah, they become charged. So they start off not having a charge. They go across the membrane, become charged, and block the sodium channel, thereby increasing the threshold you need for the action potential for the nerve to fire.
Wow. Did your brain hurt when you got the access to year one memories?
This is what happens when you read chapter one and then the next page afterwards, which we never did. But then the second way is to actually integrate itself into the phospholipid membrane. So not crossing it, but it causes an expansion. And incidentally, this is why local anesthetics don't work as well in the context of infection, because
they lose their ionization and then penetrate the ionization to act inside.
Yeah, so for those two mechanisms to work, you need the molecule to not be ionized. Now, if you've got an acidic environment like you do in infection, they become ionized. They become ionized, they get charged, they get repelled, so they can't cross the membrane.
Create a cell membrane.
Or integrate itself. Excellent. That's now that we've done advanced kind of GCSE level chemistry, we can then move on to talk about.
It's remarkable the advances in the 80s, Alan, isn't it? That's when you did your GCSEs.
O-levels,
The O-levels. On the see-through thing.
But nowadays, you can just go online and just print up the certificates, pretty much the same
thing. Exactly.
But tell me about the uses that we use it. What kind of context do we use it in?
So you can use local anesthetic in day case surgery.
Yep.
You can use it as a supplement to improve your recovery.
Yep.
Following a general anesthetic. So turn a laparoscopic operation to a day case operation because of the adequate use of local anesthetic. You can perform major operations or intermediate operations with local anesthetic, such as an obstructed femoral inguinal hernia, for example. Or a very limited cecectomy or limited appendicectomy.
Yeah.
If you have to.
Absolutely. But these are the kind of, you may think, well, why are they going off tangent a bit? But these are the kind of things that they may ask you about, like what context have you used them in? And yeah, of course, you know, day case, lipomas and so on. But just remember, there may be a group of patients who can't have a general anesthetic or even spinal or for whatever reason, elderly frail patients with heart failure and so on. And therefore, in the context of a small umbilical hernia or inguinal hernia,
Local anesthetic.
Okay. Now, sometimes we mix the local anesthetic with adrenaline. What are the good things about that and what are the downsides about it?
The good things about that is that adrenaline is a vasoconstrictor. It benefits you as a surgeon for two things. Number one, it reduces the perfusion of the area that you're working on, and it reduces the decomposition and the flushing away of the local anesthetic from your operating.
Yeah, so it maintains the local anesthetic in the area for longer.
For longer.
So you can give more.
And the other option is that you can give more. And the other thing is that adrenaline keeps your surgical field dry, so you can do the operation.
Yeah. Just so that you don't have...
Not from experience. That's a problem.
There's never a problem with you, I'm sure. Never fine. No. So there's two things, exactly. When is a time that you do not want to use it? And this is not like allergy. We're talking about you do not want to use adrenaline.
In surgical fields where they're perfused by an end artery, so digits...
Yeah,
renal blocks.
Exactly. You don't want to use it then because, of course, there's a risk of
ischemia.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the local answer. Now, there's obviously different ones we use: a short acting, a longer acting. The short acting we commonly use.
Lidocaine,
xylocaine, usually 1%. Fine.
How do you deliver local anesthetic?
In a box and then
Amazon. So either inject it subcutaneously, or you can spray, for example, an OGD.
Yeah, so it's the topical agents.
Topical agents.
They're injection agents. And
anything else? I think that's it for us.
You can give IV, but that's not you. I mean, you could do Bria blocker. That's not really, it's mainly the orthopedic surgeons that do that and so on. It's not so much in our specialty, but you can give local anesthetics via a variety of ways. You can give intravenous, subcutaneous, intramuscular, intraarticular topical agents. Yeah. Creams?
Intraperitoneal.
Yeah. You can, absolutely. For example, Lapcoli. So, I do. There is some evidence that it works, and there's some evidence that doesn't, depending what trial you were. But 1% lidocaine after Lapcoli sprayed over the liver bed. I don't know. I don't have any strong evidence to support it, but it could potentially work. But yeah, okay. So then you've got lidocaine, the short acting ones. Then you've got things that are a bit longer acting, things like commonly used. Yeah, in the UK, that's mainly what we use, and a bit longer acting. Fine. You need to know a little bit about the duration of action of each one, but not something that's going to be tested pretty extensively.
How do you classify local anesthetic?
So the depending on the chemical structure. So there's you've got some that are, they're all bound to an ester in the middle, and then they've got an amine or an amide group. We've got hydrophilic and a hydrophobic. You've got a lipophilic.
Lipophilic, amide.
Yep.
And an ionic amine at the end. That's the bit that does the work. And yep, they're bound together by an ester or an amide.
Yeah, and that's...
And that's how you classify them.
Essentially, what they've got in common is they've all got nitrogen as the main base. Then it's a case of, is it attached to carbon and hydrogen or carbon oxygen?
CC chemistry, I guess.
It's coming back, O levels. There you go.
So esters are old school things, cocaine, things.
Yes, but the ENT surgeon still would use some of those in terms of
on some the
of
the patients themselves. Yeah,
can't possibly comment on that, but they do get used. And even the spray that we use in OGD, that's largely based on that, isn't it? It's very quick acting, very quickly absorbed, but also wears off quite quickly as well. Okay, good. So we've got the local anesthetics. Calculations are always a bit of an issue. How do you calculate it?
I ask my anesthetist.
Of course you do. The good thing with that. The good thing with that is they usually shout out a number and just go, there you go, sister. What she said, what he said. Because they know that we never double check anyway. Yeah. I've never really heard of somebody having to calculate in a part two the dose.
No,
there's
not
different
yet.
Ways of doing it.
Not yet. Maybe after this episode, they might.
Yeah, exactly. It's how little surgeons know when to introduce it.
It works.
So we may get a whole bunch of people into trouble, but there are different calculation methods. Medcalc's the best way.
Medcalc.
But if you want to do pen and paper, there's different ways of doing it, and some works just for lidocaine that you can do in your head, and some works universally. Essentially, universally, the number of mils you need to use equals the dose of the drug per kilogram times the weight of the patient divided by the concentration. You won't really be asked exactly how to, but just have an idea as to how to do that. Something that makes sense to you.
Complications.
Okay, so the main complication is things like, one, it may not work. Why it may not work is because you've
not given enough.
You've left it in the box and then delivered it. Yeah, it may not work. You've not given it enough. Other complications.
Give too much.
Toxicity. Toxicity can mean that you have either got a block on, which again, in our specialty, we don't really use blocks. Or it could be really miscalculated, drug error, the dose concentration is much higher. Fine. Acidic environments, like we already talked about, usually in the context of infection. That doesn't mean it doesn't work at all, just mean it may not be as good. So always test the skin.
Or you gave it in a vessel and went back to the heart and the kidneys.
Went to the
brain.
Vessel. And this is one thing that people go to the dentist sometimes and go, oh, I'm allergic to local anesthetic. They're not. It's because they've been given adrenaline. It's gone into, they've got a bit of a palpitation. They've got a bit of sweatiness and they think they're allergic. Not true.
There's an antidote?
There is an antidote.
I can't remember it.
Lipidemulsion.
That's it.
Lipidemulsion.
Lipidemulsion.
Yeah.
Not bad. Well, academic.
We. Only the coroner and the judge know why he knows that as a GP that so they, and we're not going to explore that further because it'd be accessory. But yes, it is emulsion. Exactly. I've only seen it given once, actually.
That's the orange thing that they keep mixing in.
See, this is it. This is why we became surgeon. Yeah. Like he comes up with some kind of explanation that's outside of his field, and the surgeon says, "Is the orange sheet thing in the tube?" And he's rejected it. Yes. Hopefully it'll be the right orange tube, but you know, not squash.
Or it just looks like mango lassi.
Maybe it was squash. But yeah, that's the antidote. So you maybe ask that. But that's really it. It'll be usually in the context of another kind of scenario, are you doing a lipoma or you're doing some kind of sebaceous or a hernia, yeah. Just be mindful of not pushing things in the exam too far in terms of what you can do. The other context will be used in, or rather it will be discovered in, is ultrasound-guided blocks, so rectal sheath blocks. Or when you've done a laparotomy, for example, and, you know, there's pain...
Rectal sheath catheters.
Yeah, exactly. There's good evidence that work well.
Yep.
And they may ask, what's the advantage? Well, the advantage is that you may require less post-operative analgesia systemic, especially opiates.
Better mobility, less PCA need. Enhanced recovery in an emergency setting.
Excellent.
And that's a major can of worms, you know.
Yeah, but it may be in that, because one of your stations may be a 5-minute station on the principles of day case surgery, which we'll talk about some other time.
Which is a good idea, actually. Yeah. I think that's enough.
Yeah. That's it.